You're listening to a chapel service recorded at Asbury Theological Seminary in Orlando, Florida. For more information, visit asburyseminary.edu.
Diane and I have some wonderful neighbors. We love them dearly. And they were kind enough to have us over for dinner the other night. And the man said, my father managed a granite works in New Hampshire, Vermont. Managed a granite works in Vermont. And my father took, because he worked in granite, he fashioned his own tombstone. I mean, a long time before he died. And at the bottom of his tombstone were these words, "Who is my neighbor?" And I said, Jim, do you know where that comes from? And he said, I've always wondered where that came from. I said, have you ever heard the story of the Good Samaritan? He said, no, I've not. Tell me the story of the Good Samaritan.
Okay.
Okay. Woo! I don't think, to my recollection, I don't have a very good memory anymore, but I don't recall ever preaching on this text. It's in the Bible. It really is. You're going to love this. Listen to this. I can't wait. I can't wait to read it to you. It says, one day, an expert in religious law, a seminary professor. These folks rarely come across as noble. Matter of fact, they never come across as noble in the Bible. An expert in religious law. Dante's seventh level is for seminary professors, isn't it? I think so. Stood up to test Jesus. How old are you?
47.
47? Are you really?
Yes, sir.
Man, I'm sorry I ask. How old are you?
25.
Stand up. I mean, just a lot younger. You were. Jesus was a lot younger than this young man, God bless him, and older than this young, just a little bit older than this young man. Stood up to test him. Thank you. Teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life? Now Jesus replies, he takes the argument to the man's own turf. He puts the man on familiar ground. I mean, this guy's got a PhD in the law. Listen to this. What does the law of Moses say? How do you read it? The man answered, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength and all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. Right, Jesus told him. Do this and you shall live. And the man's thinking to himself, what? You've just answered my question with my own words. How can I take issue with that? Okay, who is my neighbor? Now, you know, Jesus must have been saying to himself, thank you, God. You've just delivered this poor sucker into my hands. Jesus says, I'm going to tell you a story. A Jewish man, don't skip over that. A Jewish man just come from Jerusalem on his way to Jericho. That's a 4,000-foot vertical drop, folks. And probably late in the day, so the shadows are already covering the nooks and crannies where the thieves can hide. The man probably just come from the Temple Mount, might have sought out a priest and Levite so that they could assist him in making sacrifice for his own sins and the sins of his family. Could be. Just off the Temple Mount. A Jewish man was traveling on a trip from Jerusalem to Jericho and was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead on the road. Just almost murdered him. By chance, a priest, perhaps just off the mount, the Temple Mount, busy with himself. I can understand that. He's got places to go, things to do. Came along, but when he saw the man lying there, he crossed to the other side of the road and passed him by. 47, are you sure?
Yes.
How come you look 25?
Because I live a clean life.
You, good for you, Joe. A temple assistant, a Levite. Perhaps the one just sought on the Temple Mount to assist him in making sacrifice for his own sins and the sins of his family. A Levite walked over and looked at him. I mean, walked over to the side of the road and looked down at him. But he also passed to the other side. How do you do that? Then a despised Samaritan. Half-breed. I mean, the Northern Kingdom was exiled when 722, give or take, into Assyria, to Nineveh and its surrounds. And they left behind only the poorest. And when the Assyrians, who were imported to take place for those who had been exiled, these Samaritans intermingled, intermarried, and eventually forgot Hebrew. And when the Southern Kingdom was exiled in 605 and in 586, after the 70 years of the exile, 516, give or take, when Zerubbabel came back to rebuild the temple, these Samaritans went down to help these purest Jews rebuild the temple. Excuse me. And what did the Jews say? Thanks, but no thanks. You're not Jews anymore. You don't even speak Hebrew. And so the Samaritans went back to Samaria, built a rival temple on Mount Gerizim. And so for the 500 or so years before the birth of Jesus, Jews and Samaritans had been going back and forth between each other's temples, desecrating them with dead men's bones. They hated each other's guts. I mean, if the previous chapter, Jesus and the disciples are going, passing through Samaria, and they are summarily rejected. Why? Because Jesus and the disciples are en route to Mount Moriah to worship God on the Temple Mount, not on Mount Gerizim. Jews and Samaritans hated each other. Listen to this. Then a despised Samaritan came along, and when he saw the man, get this, he felt compassion for him. That's the key, folks. You see, compassion exploits the difference between the priest and the Levite and the Samaritan. See, we're led to believe the difference between right and wrong is 180 degrees wrong. It's get this, it's only 1 or 2 degrees. We're just that close from the good or the bad. And compassion exploits the difference. Run the word compassion by the name of Jesus in the Bible and see what you find. You're going to love it. I mean, he sees the crowd. And what he says, and he had compassion on them. Why? Because they were as sheep without a shepherd. And what does he do? He feeds every one of them. All 5,000 of them. Served them right. God bless. Put the word compassion next to Jesus. And look what happens. The deaf hear. The blind see. The lame walk. Thank you very much. You know what lame is? You know what the King James, the word the King James uses to translate lame in the Greek? Halt. Isn't that interesting? If you've ever had anything to do with AA, you know halt. hurting, angry, lonely, and tired. We do ministry, folks. Are you listening? By the way we view people. Jesus viewed people as sheep without a shepherd. Billy Graham views people as lost. Oral Roberts views people as sick. Robert Shuler views people as low self-esteem. I view people as halt, hurting, angry, lonely, and tired. That's what compassion will do for you. You do ministry by the way you view people. Listen to this. Had compassion for him. Going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn. And it says here, our words to the effect, and he nursed him throughout the night. You didn't read that, did you? And he nursed him throughout the night. And you know what? He probably enjoyed it. Oh, but why? Compassion enjoys ministry. It does something to you. It has a way of saying to your worthless self, get behind me. This is important. You see, compassion exploits the difference, just sometimes a half a degree, between the good and the bad. Nursed him through the night. The next day, he handed the innkeeper two silver coins, 2 days' wages. Are you listening? Take care of this man. If his bill runs higher than this, I'll pay you the next time I'm here. Now, which of these three would you say was neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits? Even a PhD, even a seminary professor can get this. The one who showed him mercy. The one who showed him compassion. And Jesus says, yes, yes, yes! Now go and do likewise. I love this stuff. And I love it when life imitates the Scriptures. A few of you have heard me tell a story of taking 15 seminary students to the Ukraine. Took them to Russia and the Ukraine in January. You haven't been to Russia, do you? Been to Russia in January? Cold as a whiz. On the way back, we were on going from the hotel by bus to the airport, and I was sitting in a seat next to the window. There was an empty seat here next to me. And there was an aisle, and then what I looked like an Asian businessman sitting on the aisle seat just across the aisle. And I had my lap filled with plane tickets, trying to sort through 15 sets of plane tickets and passports. And a woman at one of the bus stops got on the bus, looking fairly haggard. The average income in the Ukraine at that time was $150 a year. Can you remember that? She got on the bus and came and sat down next to me and began showing me a few of her little paintings. and some of them I thought were quite nice, but I was so busy with these plane tickets, I did not take time to give her the attention she deserved. And she gave up on me, understandably. Turned to the man across the Asian businessman sitting across the aisle, and began showing him some of her paintings. And at one point, he picked out one and said, what would you like for this one? And she said, $15. And he looked at it, and listen, these weren't great, but they're worth $15. He looked at it, and he said, that's not worth $15. That's worth at least $250. I'll give you $250 for it. I saw him whip it out. Instantly, I'm liking this guy a lot. When we got to the airport, I'm looking for him in the airport. I want to know who this guy is. I cannot find him. We get on the plane to Paris, going to let these students have a couple of days, a couple of 3 days in Paris to kind of do a little R&R and kind of do some processing. It was really hard month. We spent a hard month. The plane takes off. The plane's almost empty. Just seems like me and my students on the airplane. And as the plane takes off, I've got my Bible out, reading my four chapters a day, and I had it on my lap. And after the plane leveled off, I got droopy, and so I just hit the button on the seat and went back and put the Bible on my chest. And just as I was dropping off, I felt the weight in the seat next to me go down. I'll not tell you what I was thinking. Dang. No, go away. I don't want to be bothered. So I opened one eye, and there was a man sitting there looking at me just like this. You know who it was? The Asian businessman. He said, "We got to talk." I said, "About what?" He said, "I don't know. We just have to talk." I said, "Talk." So he starts to talk. He says, "I'm from London. Actually, I live in Oxford, but I own 5 businesses in London. I'm on my way back to London after the connection in Paris. But then, this is Monday. Friday, I have to..." He just volunteered this stuff. I'm telling you. He says, "Friday, I have to fly to Tokyo. My father's dying, and I'm the first son." You understand the significance of that in an Asian culture. "And I've not spoken to my father for 10 years. And we've got to be reconciled." I said, "Why haven't you spoken to your father in 10 years? He said, "Well, 12 years ago, my father took a mistress. And when my saintly Buddhist mother found out about it and killed her, she died. And I've not spoken, and since then, my father married the mistress, and who now lives in his house. I've not been to the house for 10 years. Not spoken to either one of them for 10 years. The man is dying. As first son, I have to be reconciled." I said, "Well, what's it going to take?" He said, "It's going to take a miracle." I said, "Whoa, we may be onto something here." I said, "Do you believe in miracles?" He said, "Blank, no. I'm an atheist." And he said, "Not only am I an atheist, since my mother died, I have no one to admire." And I said, "Tell me about the kind of person you would admire, Joe." And he began to describe the kind of person he would admire. And I'm telling you, it was good stuff. And after about 10 minutes, so help me, all I had to do was to hit the button on that seat. It came right up. The Bible fell open on my lap. I did not have to turn a page. I said, "Let me show you the person you would admire." And I began to read just some of the pages in front of me. He said, "You mean I'm talking about Jesus?" I said, "Yeah, you're talking about Jesus." I said, "I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray to that man, Jesus, that you'll have a safe trip to Tokyo and you'll be reconciled with your father. And when you're reconciled, let me know. I like you, but I don't like you enough to pray for you forever. Don't let me off the hook. Let me know when the prayer's worked." So he said, "Why would you do that?" I said, "Because you're not worth $15. You're worth $250. He looked at me and blushed and said, "Oh, no, you saw." I said, "Dear brother, Tack was his name. I'm not the only one who saw." 10 days later, I get me a fax. This is a God's truth. In the fax, he said, "Guess what, Brother Bob? Not only was I reconciled with my father, but I was reconciled with his wife, stayed in their home. And by the way, before you stop praying for me, I have one or two other things I'd like you to consider." Compassion does that for you. I mean, compassion. I told Bill Tillman this one time. I said, "Bill Tillman, you show me someone for allowance of $250, I can change their life. I felt the weight of this woman coming up off the seat next to me. She floated. That's almost 2 years' salary. She floated off the bus. It was nothing to the man. Chump change. You show me for a lousy $250 where I can change someone's life forever. You contact me 24/7. The check is in the mail. Tillman called me on it once. He'll do that. God bless him. I love that story. I love it when life imitates the Bible. Not 2 months ago, maybe, a friend of mine had an accident. Let's call it an automobile accident. She calls her husband, and her husband says, "You stupid idiot. Why don't you watch where you're going? You're probably doing email, or no, not email, but whatever. It virtually destroyed this woman. That man came this close, a half a degree, from extending his marriage vows for years. All he had to do was to say, "Darling, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry you had the accident. Are you safe? That's the only thing that's important. Are you safe? Are you okay? The automobile, it's just an automobile. We'll get it fixed. I'm coming to get you. I'll be the one with a grin on his face." He came that close from extending his marriage vows for years. Just a half a degree from "you stupid idiot" to "darling, I am really sorry." Compassion exploits the 2 degrees. I also love it when the Bible imitates life. You turn back the page to, I think it's Luke 7. Don't call me on it. I'm pretty sure that's right. It's a wonderful story. You're going to love it. If you go to Nazareth, if you've not been to the Holy Land, I'm telling you, this is not a commercial, but you got to go. It'll change your life forever. Go to Nazareth and go to the pinnacle where the people of Nazareth took Jesus to cast him off. As you're standing there, you look across the Jezreel Valley. To the north, you see Mount Tabor. To the south, you see Megiddo. And just across the valley, you see a little town. I'm telling you, it's not much changed. It's still got a wall around it. Not the kind of wall they had in Jesus' day, but it's still got a little wall around it. It's called Nain. Now take yourself back 2,000 years. Coming out of the town is a procession. Of what? Procession of what? Funeral. Who died? Widow's only son. You understand the significance? If you're a widow in biblical times, and if your husband dies, the only thing between you and the street is a surviving son. The woman not only lost her son, but her only means of livelihood. Now, coming into the town, you got another possession. Jesus, the disciples, the inevitable crowd. So I like to think of coming out of the town, a possession of death, coming into the town, a possession of life. Jesus got this, God bless him. I love this man. He got a thing about funerals. He never goes to one. He doesn't bust it wide open. He doesn't let anybody in the ground, at least stay there for long. He's amazing. He sees the woman and what? What's the word? He has what?
Compassion.
Always a dead giveaway. He had compassion. And he said to the woman, Don't cry. Don't cry. Trust me. It's going to be okay. And he approaches the platform upon which the body is laid, and he says to the man, "Young man, I say to you, arise." Whew. Guess what? The young man sat up and began to speak. And then we have 7 of the happiest words in the whole Bible. Would you like to know what they are? You're going to love this. "And he gave him to his mama." Isn't that just like Jesus? Giving dead boys back to mamas. I love that story. That's what compassion will do for you. It'll open your ears and it'll open your eyes. It'll open your spirit. Compassion, actually, it's the word for internal organs in the Old Testament. It's not even a noun. In the synoptics, maybe the, oh yeah, well there's it's a noun in Zechariah's hymn in Luke 1, where it talks about the God of compassion. But it's a verb. I mean, it's something you do. It's something you do. So how do you get it? It's one of the best ways I know to get it. This is the, what's the word you used? The what of compassion? It's the epitomizes. Yeah, that's what you said. It epitomizes compassion. This is what compassion is all about. And Jesus calls us to remember. Why? Because we got lousy memories. I mean, a half a degree. You can slip beyond that half a degree. I mean, I missed the woman sitting right next to me. That opportunity went right by me. An atheist. Got to take that into eternity. He's not an atheist anymore. Got to take that into eternity. I want to do that. I want to take something like that into eternity with me. If Jesus was ever out of character, it was when he told that woman, surely you don't expect me to take bread that belongs to the children and throw it to the dogs. That's exactly what she said. Thank you, Joe. 30, 47?
47.
Good gracious. Even dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the children's table. Now, you've seen me hacking and coughing, so I'm not about to touch this bread. But would you take a little, just a little pinch off the top, just a little tiny pinch. You know what the moral of the story is? If crumbs can cast out demons, yea, even raise the dead, what are we going to do with a whole of the loaf? Huh? Think about it. I mean, Jesus, the disciples and the women were setting the table with the bread and the wine. The bread was for the disciples. But crumbs is casting out demons. What are we going to do with a whole of the loaf? I love it. When that crowd went to Paris, I insisted, I'm making a long story short here, they insisted on going I insisted that they go to the Sacré-Cœur. Now, that's a cathedral at the north end of the city. And Montmartre, where that cemetery, where all Balzac and all those neat people are buried. And they didn't want to go. They pouted. 15 adults pouted. It's not a very pretty thing. I made them go anyhow. And after we got back to Northwestern, I'm jogging on the track, and with a young man from Princeton. And he said, I had a vision last night. I said, whoa, Princeton graduates are not accustomed to visions, are they? He said, listen to this. He said, in this vision, I'm walking down the center aisle of the Sacré-Cœur. As I climb the step to the center table, I reach out for the cup. As I reach for the cup spills forward. As the wine spills onto the table splits open. As the wine spills onto the ground, a humongous chasm opens up. And out of this chasm emerges this leathery figure. My knee-jerk reaction was, I hope you didn't make friends with that thing. He said, that's my reaction. I'm thinking demonic. And so I'm quoting all the Bible I can remember, which is not a whole lot for a Princeton graduate, but he's giving it his best shot. This thing is nonplussed, not particularly impressed one way or the other. So finally he says to this thing, do you know Jesus? And the thing spoke without speaking. This leathery figure spoke without speaking and said, I'm a part of who you are. Ooh. And instantly they're in the last frame of that vision. And in the last frame, they're both, this thing, this leathery thing, and this young Princeton graduate are kneeling at the rail anticipating receiving the elements together. He said, what's that mean? I said, I don't know what that means. I didn't. 20 minutes later, I got it in a millisecond. I said, I got it. He said, tell me. We're on a running track, jogging track, indoors. It's still January, I think, maybe February. Cold as whiz. I said, when you were 12 years old, you inadvertently condemned a part of yourself to hell. That's what I think it means. And before you could take the cup and drink condemnation to yourself, the blood of Jesus descended into hell to release, to resurrect that part of yourself that you had condemned to hell when you were 12 years old, so that the two could become one and the we could become me. The moment I spoke the word me, he's on the floor. I mean, he's out. I can't get slain in the spirit to save my neck. I can't get a CD, a courtesy drop. I mean, this guy is down. I mean, I'm assuring everybody running around us, he's okay. But finally, when he came to, he told me a story. It's way too personal to share with you here. But he told me a story you would not believe. That's what this is about. You want compassion? Line up. I'd come back for seconds. If it didn't work the first time, come back for thirds. And not a thing in the Bible that says you can't do that. Are you ready?